Hi, I'm Ariel Posen, and you're listening in time.
Brilliant, thank you. We've got to. We can like harmonize it now. We can stack
first
it.
Day, first day.
Hey, I'm Ariel Posen. And yeah.
Hey, I'm Ariel. with that all said and done, I'd like to welcome everyone to singer-songwriter and prominent guitarist at the forefront of. I'd like to say it's alternative country. I don't know if you'd agree to describe your sound like that. But
no, I wouldn't call it that, to be honest. I would call it roots music.
Roots music. Okay.
It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I thought I'll start listening to alternative country, like folk rock, like blues. I thought, oh, well, it's going to just kill the intro if I did that. But why don't we just start like quite early on? So I had a read of your bio and you mentioned your parents are both musicians. So with that being said, what sort of tunes do you reckon were your early influences? You must have been exposed to a lot of music because you started playing quite young as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I started playing music when I was about... Sorry, I'm just getting my head... Ah, that's better. Can you edit this? Can I do that again?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Okay. I started playing piano at about 7 or so. And it was the early to mid-90s. And other than my parents being musicians and traveling with them and just being a part of what they did, which was folk music more so, my dad's bass player, my mom's playing accordion and singing, I was getting really into all the 90s music, you know? It was right around the time when Dookie came out, yeah. Green Day, In Utero, Nirvana, Rage Against the Machine, and The Offspring, and like, later on, like Silverchair, Foo Fighters. It was like that 90s rock stuff is really what made me want to play guitar. It was guitar as an ensemble piece. And separate from all that music, in 94, the Beatles anthology came out. And my parents are huge Beatles fans, and they brought us up on the Beatles big time. And we all watched that anthology as a family, and my brother and I, we learned all about it and just became obsessed. And started listening to the Beatles. The Beatles became the talking point. Like everything that we talk about with music or listen to music, we compare it back to the Beatles, or at least I would. Even though the 90s rock music was very different from that kind of stuff. You know, now I know that so much of that is inspired by that time in music. The 60s were huge for not just the Beatles, but music in the 60s was integral to music today and the 90s.
I guess it all reflects back into what you perform as well and what you write. Like you can sort of hear that the influence is there. The other thing, you mentioned you started playing piano at age 7, but so you said that, you know, for all those reasons why you got drawn away from the piano. Did you ever go back to it?
Not really. I don't even consider myself a good piano player because I just haven't put the time in. I started with it, took lessons, did the thing, but was never fully attached to it. Everyone was playing guitar. I was listening to music that featured guitar, and guitar was speaking to me. So as soon as I was able to start taking guitar lessons and start with that direction, I never looked back. And I would still play piano. I can still play. For those listening, I'm doing the quote, you know, the... but I definitely don't consider myself a player. Like I don't get called to do session work on piano. You know, sometimes the odd time I'm producing a record and we're trying to keep a budget down, I will play some keys. I just produced a record this past summer and I played all the keys and I can do again, like super, super basic. But saying that I am a piano player is insulting to people that have put in the actual time as a piano player.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's reasonable. I mean, so like you mentioned, like a lot of classic rock bands and a lot of classic records.
Is 90s considered classic rock already?
I don't know. Maybe it's my age. No, I think in my mind, it's like they're iconic albums. They're iconic artists.
How old are you?
23.
Okay, so I could see how you might think of that as classic rock.
Yeah, I think I sort of grew up with older siblings, older relatives playing a lot of that stuff. And that's like, to me, like that's what I ended up growing up on, even though around that time, by that point, it was like the mid noughties. So I should have been listening to a lot more progressive stuff. But yeah, I think that's probably why I thought of it like that.
No, I think what you grow up listening to is what you grow up listening, and
yeah,
it's something you're never in control of. How are you supposed to know? Oh, I should have been listening to more. No, it's that what you listen to is what shapes you into who you become as a person and just as a musician and an artist.
Yeah, I mean that's
the thing. It's all good.
Yes, definitely. It's but that's the thing. Like, because you mentioned all these like heavier rock artists, but now when you listen to what you play and you listen to your current sound, where you can probably like relate the tone and certain elements to it, a lot of it's kind of a lot more matured and a lot more precise, I suppose, in style. What would you say was your late the older you grew, what where did you draw your influences from then?
Well, my influence is, everything is an influence. I put time, once I started, you know, okay, I am done school and I am not going to have a real job anymore. I am fully committing and diving into music full time. You know, I started gigging. I think my first gig that I got paid for, I was 14 years old and started doing gigs like that. But by the time I was basically 18, 19, I was in. I just played rehearsals every day, different bands, different gigs. Like I was in the shit. I threw myself in. And the only way to really commit to it is by diving in. And to do that as a guitar player, a working guitar player, I had a side band where I would front it as a trio and, you know, played some original music, but mostly played a bunch of obscure covers. And we would just play 2 to 3 sets a night at random places in town. I would book us numerous gigs a week. We were busy. And that was a chance to stretch out and play the way I wanted to play. And we all wanted to play. And people would come and see that and go, cool. You know, love what you do. Want to come play on my record. Want to come play with this band. I got an artist that needs a guitar player that you'd be great for. Want to come on tour with this, you know, stuff like that. So there was that. And also to lead into that, or to bleed into that rather. Yeah. I was trying to play with anyone and everybody. I was the yes man. I would never say no to a gig, even if it meant that I had to go for dinner in a suit and then run to a gig in a suit, also pack quote unquote cool clothes to put on after and run to another gig after and do that. You know, like that was my life for years and years and years and years. And doing that. And sometimes after those two gigs, I would run to the studio because my friend's producing a record and I show up there at 11 o'clock at night and record guitars for him for an album till 3-4 in the morning. You know, when you're young, it's fine. Like you can just do those kind of things. But I wanted to be as versatile as possible. I wanted to be like that musical Swiss Army knife, which is what you want to do if you're trying to work as a hired gun. So yeah, I was listening to as much different music as I can. I put as much time into jazz as I could, into folk as I could, into classical, into rock, blues, soul, you know, country, a bunch of styles. And I just tried to not be the master of each one because that's kind of just impossible, but I just wanted to be efficient in all those styles so people could look at my name and go, oh yeah, well, he could do that blues gig great, but he could also do this country thing if you need, or, you know, he could even do the jazz thing. That's what I was trying to be. And it just came from listening to a lot of music and playing all day, all year, like just always playing and practicing.
I find that really interesting. Like you said, as soon as you left school, it was kind of like a thing where you dived right in. I guess we're in that stage now, me and Amir, that you know, we're both studying at music college and it's every opportunity we can find, we'll take and get a gig. Yeah. But one of the problems that I personally find is, you know, if you've got a project in mind or you've got stuff that you want to get out there, it's finding the right people to collaborate with. So I guess question that I want to ask is, when you left school, was it hard to find those people, or was it simple as that?
Well, first of all, I'm fortunate because I grew up with a circle already. I already had all my like-minded friends that were doing the same thing. And I didn't even go to music school. I just went to school for a year, and 3/4 of that year, I already dropped out. Like, I was like, what am I doing? I was already hanging and playing with the people that I would be frequently collaborating with and working with a lot. So I was lucky in that regard. I didn't have to go to open mics and meet people. I didn't have to go to jams to get my name out there. You know, I got my name out there by just playing and booking my own gigs and already having a circle. And it's important to, like, if you have a scene or a circle, you know, I've learned that rather than trying to find the better circle, if you, like, you know, especially now with the internet, we see, you see pockets of scenes and people collaborating. You're like, oh, what I'd do to be a part of that, what I would do to play. It's like, you know what, you have the tools and the people where you are already. You just have to flesh it out, and you need to give it a chance at the same time. That being said, I don't have the experience being in a music college, which, did you guys said you're both in music college, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, the network is there. I think 90% of the reason why people go to music college, obviously there's the private lessons with certain instructors and whatnot, but it's the community and it's that network, and it's built by being there, so that once you're done college, everyone kind of goes their separate ways, but you have this family and this community still, and that really helps. That's something that a lot of people don't have who didn't go to school.
Yeah, I guess I completely agree with that. We have got a great network. We study at BIM in Birmingham. It's got so many, it's hundreds of musicians. It's great.
Oh, BIM is amazing. Any of those BIMs, like that, you couldn't be at a better place to just flesh out a scene, you know?
Yeah, exactly. One of the great things about it as well, you know, some of the lecturers, like you mentioned, you get fantastic one-to-one private lessons. But I guess for us, that's kind of the thing that's helping us build our understanding of music in general, in harmony and theory and all that stuff. Growing up with musical parents, was that something that you knew and understood from a very early age, or is it something that you've had to learn yourself?
Yeah, I mean, growing up with musical parents is just all I knew. And in fact, I don't have not even musical parents, musical grandparents and musical great-grandparents. Like, music goes generationally in my family. It's just what I knew. And it was just what, you know, it was weird if you weren't musical. So when I chose to want to go that direction and fully pursue it, and they were honest, because, you know, my dad was on the road touring and doing the thing. And both my parents have had a band for decades, award-winning and stuff like that. Like, they've properly did the thing. And they said, you know, it's great, it's fun, but it's hard. And you got to want it. You really, you know, no one's out there to do you any favors. You really got to put the work in and find those opportunities and make it happen for yourself. But it's also hard, you know, like, there's a lot of downside to being a musician, especially if you start going on the road. Just letting you know, like, we fully support you. Do whatever you want. Like, we can tell that you're passionate about it. Fully, yeah, go for it. But here's the things. Here's the pros. Here's the cons. You make the decision, basically. There was no, like, we really don't think you should be doing that. Never. It's full support.
Well, so something you also mentioned before about, you know, growing within your scene and helping your scene grow, like, your local area. So I don't want to, I mean, I just want to touch on it a little bit, but I suppose sonically, yourselves and Brothers Landreth are quite similar. Is that just because you're both from the same town as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we're all from Winnipeg.
Yeah, so is that, you just knew them? Were they part of that circle that you just mentioned?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Oh. I mean, they're just other dudes in a like-minded circle who are also all playing as sidemen.
Yeah.
Trying to get gigs, trying to make money, playing with whoever would call. Hmm. So, yeah. You sound like, if there's similarities in the sound, you know, due to the nature, we've all been playing together a really long time, and we were playing in that, or I was playing in that band with them for just over 5 years. Like, certain elements kind of rub off, and certain elements become a part of your own sound too. But at the end of the day, we all grew up listening to the same, a lot of the same music and playing with each other. And as we were all growing as musicians and as people, you know, we were experiencing that together.
Well, I think it all goes back to what you mentioned before as well, you know, how like the Beatles inspired so many generations in front of them. And then you've got like Sabbath inspiring metalheads in Birmingham and Arctic Monkeys inspiring indie in north of the UK. Like, it's just sort of cultivating within each sort of area, and it localizes, in a way it localizes sound, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? It's just
no, it's integral.
I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's great.
But I mean, like, we wouldn't have the Beatles if it wasn't for Little Richard and Chuck Berry and Elvis, you know, like, rest in peace, Little Richard, a couple days ago. But without all those guys, the Beatles wouldn't have even been what they are. Sure, everything post, I don't know, Hard Day's Night or even Help, like once they started becoming a studio band after Revolver, there's a very good chance that Chuck Berry, Elvis and Little Richard and everyone else didn't really have much to do with that sound, but yeah, they did. They still wouldn't have been who they are. You know, they evolved at that point. That's what happens when you're an artist or you're a band and you have a scene and the people that you're working with in time, you know, it's all about developing your own voice too. And that's the most important thing. And they got it to a point where it was ever evolving. And, you know, you take all your, they took all their influences at some point and then you go, okay, thanks. You can stay here now. I'm going to go on and do the rest of my journey without you. Thank you for what you've taught me and what I've taken from you to a degree, but like, I'm focusing now on my own. And that's what they've all done. That's what everyone does. Yeah. And it takes a while to find that, you know, it's okay for people, like you're saying, for metalheads to be influenced by Sabbath and sound like Sabbath and then like eventually turn into something original, more original, because like artistry takes time. It takes a minute to find your voice. It takes a minute to find like your true sound. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's a problem with anyone taking a little while to carve out their actual sound and voice, because everything is influenced by something. And you take it to a certain degree and then you kind of leave it. And that's when you start really honing in on whatever it is that makes you, you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think finding your voice as a musician, your unique voice anyway, it's one of the hardest things that we go through.
Yeah.
One of our most, a few of our recent guests, we had Mark Letteri on a few weeks ago and just Martin Miller the other day. And they've both released fantastic solo instrumental albums.
Yeah.
Obviously, that takes inspiration from the likes of Steve Vai and Satriani, but they've both got their own unique, distinct sound. I guess because you're such a competent, fantastic guitarist as well, did you ever think about going down the instrumental route? Has it always been more of an artist, songwriter kind of vibe?
I've always thought about doing the instrumental thing. Like, I've had bands where we played some fusion stuff, you know, everything from like Tribal Tech to Garage Artois to Schofield to like stuff like that, to just even instrumental type of guitar, solo guitar stuff. I love guitar, and like it's the instrument I've chosen to get the music out. But as an artist and as a performer, I've never had the bug to just pursue instrumental music. To me, I love singing, I love songs, and I've just grown up listening to songs. And that's what moves me. That's what makes me feel something. Not to say you can't feel anything from instrumental music, because you can. And I do. But, you know, a narrative, a story, the big picture, you know, it's just that whole thing, singing and harmonies and all that stuff. That's what speaks to me. And that's just what I do. And that's what I've always done, more so than instrumental music. That being said, you know, my music, like on my records, it's not guitar music, but if you come see a show, we're serving songs and singing and stuff like that. But there are a lot of moments for stretching out, and there's a lot of moments for instrumental playing. Like, that's important to me as well. Stretching out and being a player and doing that kind of thing is so important to me as a musician. So that is a huge part of what I do. But on record and for recording, you know, it's not that I want it to be more accessible to more people that don't just like instrumental music. I just like songs. I want to put out songs.
I suppose publicly as well, you like a lot of your videos online, as well as just being your originals that you post, you're sort of Ariel posting the guitarist as well. So were there any issues trying not to blur the lines between being just a guitarist and being actually a singer-songwriter as well when you came to releasing your own stuff? Because you only started officially releasing on Spotify in like 2018-19.
Yeah, first single came out end of August 2018. Here's the thing, guys, I'm a guitar player, and guitar is what's helped me build any kind of profile that I have, whatever, however small or however big to some it may seem, you know. It is what it is. But guitar is, without guitar, I wouldn't be where I am, you know? So I respect what got me there. And sure, I want to be looked at as an artist and a singer-songwriter. But I know also that a big part of my following follows me because they're guitar fans too, you know? And that means that sometimes I'm going to post a song of me singing my heart out and playing my heart out, and people will just want to know what kind of capo I'm using. You know, that's inevitable. That's fine. You know what? If you come to a show of mine and you come to the merch line after the show and say, hey, you know, big fan, I'm here because I saw you demo some kind of pedal on Andertons, or hey, I'm here because, I don't know, something unrelated to the music itself or the songs, I don't care. Thanks for coming. It's all the same. It all, you know, I don't need, I know that I'm like a songwriter and an artist performing. If people are looking at me just as a guitar player more so, who happens to play songs too, that's fine. Think of it however you like. But if you're going to come to a show, if you're going to buy a record, if you're going to support, that's all that matters. It can be in whatever way you decide, you know?
I think and all of those things kind of link together as well, like you said, whether it's demoing pedals and Andertons, whether it's, I mean, I saw a video the other day of I think it was on Justin Guitar talking about slide guitar, whether it's that, whether it's the music, it brings everybody together and it creates a community, and that must feel incredible when you can play on stage and you've just got a wave of people there, all there for you, and you know, they all appreciate what you do, whether it's one, all of those different areas, or just one of them. It must feel
100%. I'm grateful for any kind of support. You know, you can't go in with expectations. You can't go in with any kind of, you know, if you're going into this only for the reason of, oh, I want to play this room and have this many people, you're doing the wrong thing. You should be doing it because you're passionate about the art or the music you're making, and you want to make sure it's honest, genuine, and it's good. And that's all your focus should be on. If you're doing all the right things, chances are people will get behind it because they like sincerity, and they want to believe in something, and they know when something's kind of phony or just kind of put on because someone's trying to do what everyone else is doing, or someone's doing what they, you know, it's like, he or she really shouldn't be doing that because I can tell that they're more of this type of musician or something, but they're doing this because they think that's going to get them farther in this industry. You know, people can smell it out.
I think, like, I mean, by the sounds of it, you're like, you're really switched on, like you're always on it with music. But then does there ever come a point where, you know, you've just had like a whole day of gigging and you don't want to hear one more song, you don't want to like talk to someone about the next chord or anything like that? It doesn't strike me as, like, you sound like you're always
all the time Yeah, I'm up for it. Music is like, it's not what I do, it's who I am, for sure. But that being said, you know, I find it just as important to step away also.
Yeah. Have you figured out, like, do you have like a go-to thing you do to just switch off as well?
Well, switching off, I mean, exercising is great. And, you know, having other hobbies is important. And being interested in other things is very important. And I find even just a day or two, I don't like doing more than 2 days, but a day or two of not even picking up an instrument, actively listening to music, it really does you good, because you come back more, I'm speaking for myself, of course, but
yeah,
you come back more energized, more inspired, more creative and wanting to do it. What else? Yeah, like, yeah, it really comes in waves.
Yeah.
And in this time where we're not traveling a lot and we're not, well, we're not traveling at all. We're not doing what we usually do. You know, I've gotten into more of a routine, which I really enjoy, which is something that doesn't happen when you're on the road, at least for me. And yeah, I'm listening to some music, but I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm listening to, or I'm just like not listening to anything. And yeah, sometimes I appreciate stuff so much more when I'm not listening to stuff 24/7. And yeah. And I'm always, once I step away from playing or working on something and I just do other stuff, like when I'm exercising or if I go for a walk or anything, if I'm traveling, that's when I'm the clearest to start brainstorming ideas, brainstorming a plan for something, this or that. You know, when you're doing it all the time, you're so focused on one thing and doing it, stepping away, I just see everything so much clearer.
So, I mean, with you sort of touched on it there as well with lockdown quarantine. I'm guessing Canada's a little bit better than the UK right now. But so have you been keeping productive with everything? Just more business based.
It took me a while. It was that first month. I can speak on a bunch of my friends, colleagues, was not feeling inspired, was not feeling creative. Didn't even really want to pick up a guitar because playing music, there's a side of, and I'm speaking for a lot of people I know, like half of me is, it's because it brings me joy and it comes from a joyful place. And the other half is because you work on something because you know you're working on something to share with everybody, to take it on the road, to, you know, put out new music. And knowing that we can't do that, it was like feeling really uninspired to do that. Like, what's the point even, you know? And that wore off, thankfully. And yeah, I've been teaching a lot. I do the Skype lesson thing. I would always do it whenever I'd come home off the road. You know, I just post, hey, everybody, I'm home for 3 weeks. If you want to do Skype lessons, get at me. But now I've just been doing it. That's been fun. And I have been, you know, I've been doing every 2 weeks on my Facebook, I'll do a clinic. I'll take like a Q&A. I'll play some songs. I did a clinic where I just like taught everybody how to play a bunch of my songs. This past week, I did a clinic where I went through all the stems of how long my last record. I talked about as a producer, just production ideas of how I like to put together a song and how it was applied on a bunch of these songs that some of my fans know. And yeah, and I've had some other sessions, you know, some people have still been calling me for some guitar tracks, which is great, but nearly not as productive as I usually am. I am just starting to feel like I can even start writing again. I haven't been in that mood, partially off because I've been finishing up my new record. So I've been very focused on these new songs. I just haven't really been thinking about writing new stuff yet.
No, I know what you mean, especially when it's like you're stuck at home and you felt like you've got no choice but to play at that point. And it's just like, it was hard to get over as well. Just like, hang on a second, this is a perfect opportunity, but why does it feel so hard to actually pick it up right now?
Yeah. I think everyone was feeling strange. Like, why? What am I doing wrong that I'm not feeling motivated, that I'm not feeling inspired? And just, it is what it is. You can't control how you feel. And clearly a lot of people are in the same boat. Like, you're not crazy. It's okay to feel that way. And just let it happen. And then once it passes, hopefully you'll be back to feeling how you were before and you'll carry on, you know?
Well, something you mentioned as well before about, you know, you write the songs with partly with the intent to play it live. So you were actually in the UK earlier this year. A few venues around the country as well. How do you find that? Anyways, you've been in the UK a few times as well.
Yeah, the UK is always great for me. spent a lot of time there, and the fans are excellent there. They love to support. They love to come out to shows and sing along. And I love coming to the UK. I'm so glad that we got, I'm just fortunate in the sense that we did that. We did about 3 weeks in the UK. I came home for a show in Canada, went back out to Sweden for 2 weeks, did a tour, came back to Canada for one more show. And basically a couple days after that, everything shut down. And I was taking a couple months off from touring anyways. So it worked out okay. But yeah, the UK is always great.
I mean, one of the, we all took it for granted as well with, everything was still open.
We'll catch him next time if we miss the show. You know, there's always next time. That's how everyone always thinks. But now it's like, damn, wish I went.
Well, one of the venues played at London, the Omera.
Yeah.
So I actually saw Corey Wong there, who you played with on a track. Was that a year ago, 2 years ago?
That's Simon. My dude right there. Yeah, we did that a year and a bit ago, January of last year.
How'd that come about then?
Well, we, funny enough, you guys are familiar with NAMM, right?
Yeah.
So we met at NAMM 2000. I'm doing the math. Just like maybe 2.5 years ago, we met at NAMM, and it was kind of right place, right time. We were both at a certain booth, and a mutual friend of ours said, "Hey, Ariel, do you know Corey? Corey, Ariel, hey, nice to meet you. You guys should play right now." And it was like, okay. So we just jammed, and you know, at NAMM, it's kind of funny. You sit down and play with somebody and you can't really hear anything you're doing. And suddenly a bunch of people just crowd around because they think maybe you're Marcus Miller or something like that, or Victor Wooten. And they think something important is going down. And we played, we had fun. It was really natural. And we just got chatting afterwards and said, yeah, man, let's keep in touch. That was a lot of fun. Where are you based? Blah, blah, blah. Where are you, you know, and we joke cause he lives in Minneapolis, which is just 6 hours south of Winnipeg, which is where I'm from. Very close. So I always consider Minnesotans and Manitobans as like the same people. And then I happened, you know, a month later, after we met, I was in Ireland when he was playing in Dublin, and I went up and played some songs with them. It was really fun. And yeah, kept keeping in touch. And yeah, we were in Toronto a year, like January last year. I was spending a month there doing some work, and he came through on tour. He played at the Horseshoe, and I actually got up with him. And then some mutual friends of ours, Frank Brothers, which is a great guitar company out of Toronto, were doing some videos, just, you know, promoting their guitars. And they had us come down, and we just played a tune. We played one of Corey's tunes, and they filmed it.
Two things I just noted there as well was, you said 6 hours. What, that 6 hour drive or 6 hour?
6 hour drive. Oh yeah, it's like 40. Wait, like an
the
hour.
Way you dropped that, like it's so close. Like in the UK,
For those of you who aren't familiar, what we're talking about, if you're Canadian, you're used to drive, like to go to major cities. Like let's go Birmingham to, I don't know, Derby or something like that. What is that? A couple hours?
About 2 hours, 2.5.
Yeah, exactly. 2 hours. That's like a long drive for you guys.
Yeah.
For us, that is a gift. That is a short drive. The shortest drive you could do going major, if you're going west from Winnipeg, the next biggest city is Regina. And Regina is 5.5 hours from Winnipeg. And that's about as short as it gets.
I'm so glad you said that twice. I misheard it the first time.
So, yeah, when I go into the UK and my tour manager, who's from Kent, it's like, oh, I got a long one today, guys, 3.5 hours. I'm like, okay. We crushed that for breakfast over in Canada, you know?
We're packing food for a 3 hour journey, mate.
Yeah. But you know what? I get it too, because you can't really rip on those motorways the same way. The highways in North America are designed to go like 100 to 110 kilometers per hour. You know, you really, and like they're four lane highways sometimes. Once you're in the States and you get on the interstates, like you're burning through. It's just a different thing. Canada's just way too spread out, way too big. You can't help it.
I guess it's really interesting as well. You said that because both of us, we play shows quite regularly in Birmingham and played a few around the country. But how would you say touring in the UK differs from touring in Canada and maybe even the US? Like, is it much different?
It's not much different at all, to be honest. At the end of the day, we do the exact same thing. Hotels are way cheaper in the UK, which is great. Certain places are just smaller. And the thing about the UK compared to North America is that it's older, so much older. You know, Canada's about 150 years old. We're just a baby. So everything is designed more modernly. And just like some things are more functional and allow you to do things faster and get around quicker. You know, in the UK, there's a lot of one ways still. There's a lot of, you know, these roundabout, you know, I'm just talking about road setups right now. But at the end of the day, in the UK, it's the same thing, you know. There's great venues. There's great music lovers. Promoters are promoters. it's all the same.
Yeah.
I do find that certain places in the UK, though, tend to be very shy and timid. And you get that in rural smaller places in Canada as well. Like you'll play somewhere. Like I've had times, I remember played in Edinburgh. We played it this year too, but I do Edinburgh every year. And last year we did it. We had a great show with a great turnout at the Voodoo Rooms, is this cool place. And, you know, very, very kind of quiet crowd, you know, I don't like people talking during a set or yelling things, but you know, usually people want to applaud after solos. They want to be really vocal after a song and show the love. And sometimes they just like, you know, you do something and people, yeah, oh yeah. You hear people say, it was such a silent show. It was so weird. And I thought they hated it. And the merch line, everyone, it was so funny because at the merch line, the lineup was absolutely crazy, and they'd all come up and be like, hey man, just really sorry, I know it was really kind of awkward, but like that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. I just didn't want to fully show. And then the next person, hey, I'm sorry, we were a little quiet, that was the most amazing thing. And then, like, they just had a different way of showing it, you know, and that's fine. And you get that all over the place. Even in the States, you get places where they're just like, yeah, that was right on, that was really good, sorry we were quiet, but that's just how we are here. It's like, that's fine. That's the beauty of travel and seeing different places, is that you get to see the human nature and how people react to these kind of things all over the world.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I guess it comes with genres of music and like ways you can move to them in a live setting and all of that. But then the thing, I suppose, with style, the other thing I wanted to touch on as well. I mean, this is partly to do with Corey Wong again. But do you ever have any reservations about fusing like a slide guitar style into a different style? Like I never really thought I'd hear like a slide guitar go in with punk, but it works perfectly.
It's not something I've actively thought about because it's just what I do, you know, and that's such a big, it's being comfortable in your own skin. You know, I think 50-ish% of what I do is with a slide on and 50% of it is without it. And I'm not, you know, just like how people are ageist or sexist, I'm not genre-ist. You know, it's what I do, and with respect and to a degree, I'm going to try to find a way to make it fit on whatever I'm playing, because that's just part of my voice. And to be fair, that song Simon has slide on it already, and that's, I think, why we did it. So boom, there you go.
No, that's cool. That's just like egging you on now to start shredding Slide over a metal track now.
Right, really I've done it. Track. I've played Slide on like not metal, but like really heavy rock stuff. In fact, you should listen to band Big Wreck. A guy named Ian Thornley. It's a Canadian band. If you want to hear a great example of hard rock, like, I mean, they're still kicking, but they were around in the 90s, early 2000s, still when rock was really alive. And Ian is not only an amazing guitar player and Slide guitar player, but he is like, I know, I'm sure he hates hearing this, but he was like the Canadian Chris Cornell in terms of what his voice sounds like.
Right.
But really, he has his own thing too. He really sounds like Ian. Yeah, if you want to hear Slide in heavy rock music, listen to Big Wreck.
Any records you recommend off of them?
In Loving Memory of, I think, is their very first one. But their last few records, like Ghosts and Albatross, are my two favorites.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I suppose going back, I mean, we went off on a huge tangent there. Going back to yourself on your How Long record.
Yeah.
So how long does it take to write that? Like how did you find the writing process? Because it's come out quite I don't want to say late on, because I think it sounds amazing. Like there's, I don't know if it would it have benefited from coming earlier. Like would you have wanted to release that same record earlier?
No, I don't think I would have been ready then. I think everything that happened in my life and in my career shaped. Oh, sorry guys, it all shaped me to who I am and where I am at. And I don't think I would have been ready any earlier. So when the time happened, you know, I was spending some time in Ireland and I was not doing a whole lot at the time. I was thinking to myself, okay, how did I get my start when I was playing music when I was younger? And I said, oh yeah, I just started booking my own shows in a band, in my band. So I just started doing that again. I had a bunch of great guys in Ireland that I knew, and I just started booking gigs under my name. And again, just obscure covers, different stuff. And I felt this thing that I haven't felt in a long time. You know, it was like, wow, I forgot how much I enjoy playing and singing and how fun it is and how different it is than just playing. Not that I was looking for the spotlight, not that I was looking for any kind of eyes on me. It was just like I needed to work and no one was going to hire me unless you put yourself out there. So I booked my own gigs and like I was like, you know what, I really enjoy this. I forgot that this was fun, and that's all it was. So I started doing that more and more, and I got talking to my friend who produced the record, and we were like, you know, why don't we just, I love co-writing, I love writing with other people just as much as I love writing on my own, and let's want to write a tune, Skype, sure. And we wrote a song called Try and sat on it for a bit, you know, it was like, this is kind of cool. Didn't really think much more of it. And we wrote another tune. And then I was back in Winnipeg and we wrote a few other songs, wrote How Long and Get You Back. And then, you know, that all started, let's say February or March, 2017. And I want to say by November, I was sitting on about five or six songs that I felt good about. And then I went on tour in January, February of 2018. Did a tour with Josh Smith. We co-billed a tour. And I had, you know, I was doing like a set with most of these songs. And I talked to, right in the middle of the tour, we were in London and I was doing a clinic for ACM and we were playing Under the Bridge in London that night. And I know I've told this story a million times, but whoever hasn't heard it, that's all good. I was wearing a white shirt, white jumper, and I spilled coffee all over it. So I went to the nearest TK Maxx, and as I'm looking for clothes, just a replacement shirt for the gig, you know, I'm having a reflective moment of the last 2 weeks on tour. And I just called Murray, and I said, hey, man, I'm going to be in Winnipeg next month to produce a record for somebody else. I'm thinking if I don't do this record of my own now, like while I'm feeling just my own personal momentum, I don't know that I'll ever do it. if I so like I'm gonna see if I can book the studio time, blah blah blah. Are you down for producing it and doing it? He said, absolutely. And we made it happen. We had, I think I wrote Fade after that tour. That was the last song written for the record. And we just did it. And, you know, then kept going.
I suppose there's a couple of things there as well. Like, so you said you wrote over Skype as well, a lot of it. So, I mean, that's something everyone's doing right now, I guess. They're doing a lot more of. How'd you find that to start with? So I suppose you were doing it before anyone, like a lot of other people were probably writing in that manner.
Oh, dude, I've always been doing it. It's basically like you're in the only thing you can't do is play at the same time. You can't play with people at the same time. That's the only thing. It's the same thing as the only downside of doing Skype lessons is you can't play at the same time. Otherwise, it's like you're in the same room. It's pretty good. Yeah, I've been doing it. You know, I was spending so much time away from Winnipeg that I had no choice but to do Skype writes.
No, I think that's a creative solution to a modern problem, I guess, where you're away from where you want to be.
Well, definitely it's a solution to a modern problem now, but you know, sometimes people feel more comfortable at home rather than in person sometimes too. I'm not speaking for myself, but some people, you know, might feel better about doing a collaboration or a write if they can wear their sweatpants in their bedroom with someone rather than getting dressed, feeling the pressure of going there. I always prefer in person, but I can see how people would benefit from doing it this way.
I think that's the other thing as well. So, I mean, with your album, it's I don't know if you you'd class it as this as well, but for an album sake, it's quite short, isn't it? 33 minutes. Was there like a certain point where you were like, actually, no, I'm quality over quantity. So,
100%. I think I had. I mean, how long is 10 tracks? Three of the tracks are little interludes, so really it's 7 songs. I was sitting on 9 or 10 songs that I could have put on the record. And I just wasn't, they just weren't good enough to be. So yeah, I was happy to sacrifice those songs and go for quality over quantity. And this next record I'm working on, which is basically in the bag already. I wrote 20 songs. I had 20 songs to choose from. And ended up with 12, which is my goal every time. Like, you want to have enough to choose from. So I was able to do that for sure. But yeah, the first one, I basically had like 9, 10 songs, and you know, I could have done maybe one more of those, but I just wasn't feeling honest those songs. And it goes back to talking about being genuine and stuff. It just wasn't cutting it. So I was happy to, and I don't miss them. I don't think back and go, I wish I, you know, that's the process.
I mean, that's something really interesting you mentioned then. That there's this new record, 20 songs that's quite a hefty amount. So, you know, when you've got to push that down to a smaller track list for an album, are you listening back to those tracks and really picking out which ones are perfect? Or is it just kind of like what feels best for the record? What's more sonically, I guess, cohesive with the rest of the songs? Or is it kind of your personal favorites? I don't know. Explain that if you could.
It's all of the above. It's, first of all, once you have enough songs to choose from, you look at the, you know, the lyrically first, which are the strongest ones. You know, this one is good. This one's good. This one is kind of about nothing. You know, that one's not that strong. It's not about the sonic textures or anything like that. When I write a song, I'll demo it. Like, every song I have recorded from How Long or from this next record, like I already had recordings of them that I made. I programmed drums or had a friend play drums on them, and I play and sing everything else. And I know that when we're recording, we can make them sound however extravagant or non-extravagant as they need to be. So that's not as much of an issue. It comes down to the lyrical content, like the actual music side of it. Is it hooky? Is it strong? Is it just good? And you just know when a song is good, great, not great, not good, bad, you know? And sometimes it's certain songs weren't picked because they were bad. They were just not as strong. And you know, you never know. Maybe those songs could be used down the road, or they could be used for somebody else. That's what it's all about.
So what's changed between the last record and this one? That do you think it's have you forced any changes in the way you've written?
Or the definitely not. Definitely not forced anything. Everything has been natural. You know, I put out that we recorded that record March 2018, and it's been over two years now since we recorded that. And since we recorded that album, you know, I got a lot of more shows under my belt. I have a lot of touring under my belt. I have a lot of sessions under I have just so much more under my belt of doing me, doing my thing. So I like to think that as a performer, as a singer and a guitar player, I was definitely a lot more comfortable in writing and definitely recording process. The first doing how long I wasn't nervous, but you know, I was just so overwhelmed by the fact that this is my thing that there were times where I didn't even know what to do because I was just so overwhelmed. Normally I do a session for someone. I show up, hey, what's up? What's the song? Cool. Okay. Just press play. Yeah. Yeah, it needs this part now. Like, yeah, I don't come in cocky sounding like that ever, and I don't ever feel that way. But I'm confident in my ability doing sessions usually because I have my things that I know work well on a song and whatever. And when it was my thing, I was just stumped. So I was glad I had a producer. This time, it was like I had Murray again, the same producer, but we co-produced it, and I felt so much more comfortable. First of all, I had been sitting on these songs right after we mixed and mastered How Long, which was like June 2018. I already started writing more songs. And it was about almost just under a year and a half of writing new material. So I have been sitting on some of these songs for a long time as well. Got really cozy with them. And once we recorded, I already knew what I wanted to do. I already knew, was hearing things. So that was a lot easier. I think as a singer, I've improved just because, you know, you do anything enough for amount of time, you will get stronger at it. So all those elements feel better. And just as an artist, I feel like these songs, I'm proud of How Long. I'm proud of those songs. I love those songs. But I feel like this album sounds more like me even. And I feel like I've like I was saying earlier, it takes a while to find you. You know, we were talking about the Beatles being influenced early by Chuck Berry and those guys. And then by 1965, 66, they really carved out their own thing. Now I'm feeling like, you know, my first album was very much me, and I stand by that. But this one is even more. Like I've just been channeling it even more and getting deeper into what the sound I'm hearing in my head for my music, the songs I'm hearing in my head, and just more, it's continuing on the exact same path. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel in any way, but it just sounds more comfortable and more like myself. So I'm very excited about it. I can't wait to start getting music out there.
I completely agree. I guess an artist's albums throughout their lifetime it's almost like the perfect autobiography because it reflects where they were and where they are in life then and now. I guess, you know,
they're like timestamps for sure.
You're taking everything that's happening within your own life and people around you and all the experiences you face and put it straight into that, and it's there forever. It's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it can be great and it can also drive you crazy. Yeah. If you're the type of person that's always looking to improve and evolve, listening back, there's going to be times where you go, oh
yeah.
Like I even have that. Like I listen to How Long and there's certain things I already listened to where I'm just like, oh, that's normal. That's just what happens.
I guess it can also be, you know, if an album has been put out a bad person in someone's life, it can all almost be hard to look back at that and read.
Yeah.
So although it is completely a positive, there are negative aspects to, you know, drawing inspirations from your own life. But I guess you got to do that as an artist. You got to tell your story. So
you got to tell your story, but you know, you can tell any story. That's the best part about being an artist. You know, one of my favorite songwriters. One of my dear friends, his name's Del Barber. Check him out if you haven't. He's also from Winnipeg. And I used to play guitar for him for years. I would just go on tour, be his guitar player, played on a couple of his records. And he comes from like the John Prine school of songwriter. And a lot of his stuff is autobiographical. So much of it is, you know, just fiction. He just like wrote stories and wrote songs about people and characters and things. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's just amazing, right? So like my point is that it doesn't always have to come from your own life experience. It can come from others' life experiences, or it can just be created. That's the beauty of writing.
I completely agree with you. It doesn't really matter what you write about. It's just, you know, where you are at the time. You can take whatever you like and turn it into something brilliant. That's what you're doing for this new record. It's going to be something different to the last, but it's also going to have aspects of you in there that people will know. It's great. It's just something I find fascinating about releasing music over the years. I've always been interested in that. It's great.
It is. I totally agree with you. I mean, you go listen to any of your favorite artists and listen through their discography and just, you hear the journey, you hear their path, really. It's amazing.
No, I think that's amazing though. So like, I mean, I suppose this goes on the theme of like, what's next. So you've got your album, everything's recorded, is it? And then is it all just ready to start being rolled out now?
It's just about ready to be rolled out. But I mean, the original plan before pandemic vibes, it still wasn't going to come out for quite a while. The first single was going to come out sooner than later, but now that everything has changed, so has that plan. And we're kind of in the reconstructing phase of how we're going to release that. Because, you know, a lot of bands right now and artists, I feel so badly for the people that had albums scheduled to come out that Friday of when the pandemic, or like the week after, or like those first 3 weeks. It's like everyone was so distracted that I can't believe that was almost 2 months ago already. But everyone was so distracted, unless you're Drake or Childish Gambino, like certain bigger artists are like comfort music to people. And no matter how distracted they are, when you're that big, you could put out a record in World War III and people are still going to be excited about it. But for independent artists and whatnot, you know, it was so much, I felt so bad for all the people that worked so hard, put in so much time to, you know, make a strategy for the album release and a campaign. And I'm not even talking about the touring. That's a whole other thing. And to have that all canceled, or just like have people so distracted by what's going on. When it came out, I feel like so many people's releases got swept under the radar because of that. So I think 2 months later, people are now, you know, they're listening to music now. They're less distracted. But I think streaming just in general is down so much more from where it usually is, because people were so used to listening to music when they're traveling, when they're commuting or doing this or that. And now that there's a lot less of it, it's changed. But that being said, certain places are doing better than others, and certain places are starting to pick up again. I think what we're going to see is a lot more people focusing on digital campaigns more so than focusing on the live. There's going to be ways that people have to put more effort into the online side of things without thinking about the live aspect, which seems weird, but it's just the reality we're in.
Is this something you think you're going to end up considering, or are you going to just keep patient with it and just wait through?
Well, don't want to give away too many spoilers, but I'm considering all options. all options have been considered. Yeah.
So I suppose we'll start closing out the podcast. I've just noticed that we've got one question that's just come in to our account. It's just come from Alex. This is more of a technical question, I guess, but how did you get started using Open Tunings?
I started with Open Tunings about 13 years ago. I started listening to this guy named Kevin Bright, who's a Canadian guitar player. One of my he's like my favorite guitar player. Definitely my Slide influence. And yeah, he played in open tunings, and I was just hearing these chords and like the Slide stuff I was hearing, and I was moved by that. And I was like, okay, whatever needs to be done to get that sound, I need to do that. So like going to open E for sure. But there was something about the chords he was playing, the voicings that were changing, was really speaking to me. It was almost like piano voicings, you know? And I just took a guitar, I tuned it to open E, and I just basically started taking a guitar to every gig I was on. Sometimes it was great, but using it in context and using it every gig helped me understand basically all the things I was already doing and doing it now in different tunings, if that makes sense. So like, you know, if my A major chord on the fifth fret bar power chord was this, I know no one can see this, but now rather than, you know, playing the frets 5, 7, 7, 6, 5, 5, it now was all 5, 5th fret every note. And then I just started thinking of the intervals themselves, so that rather than depending on chord shapes and voicings, I would just start thinking intervallically and thinking about, okay, what makes a major 7th chord? What makes a 6th chord? What makes a minor 7th chord? What makes a 13th chord? And then just figuring out how to do all that stuff in the open tuning now. And fairly quickly, it wasn't as hard as I thought it'd be. You know, I really had to work on it and really put a lot of time into it. But eventually it got to a point where I could put on an open tune guitar and switch to a standard. And they just felt like two different like-minded instruments almost, because I kind of play differently in each one. And that's the point. I don't want to be doing the same thing in each tuning. So that's how I got started.
That's spot on. I think that's an immaculate answer. So thanks for joining us, Errol. If you like the podcast, feel free to like, subscribe, and share it around. Yeah, we're available on all streaming platforms. So if you're checking us out on YouTube, we're also on Spotify and Apple Music. Yeah, cheers for coming on, Errol.
My pleasure, guys. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Cheers. Nice chat, you guys.
Okay, recording has stopped on my end.
Yeah.